appropriate cuss word. Fuck! I was mad we had to kill another bear. I had killed a nice boar already, and we were on a high after that awesome success and sweet footage of my perfect bow shot. Now we had another kill, which we didn't want. Despite the fact that we were in grave danger, that aspect never entered our minds. After I cussed, mad, shaking my head, Roy said matter-of-factly, "Dude, I had to." I replied, "I know, it just sucks." A typical response might have been, "Oh my God, we could have been killed. Are you okay? I'm shaking." But I knew the partner I had in Roy. He shared the same type of confidence I had. He was never rattled and was always in control. I knew in 10 lifetimes, I'd never find another partner like Roy. Where does your strength come from? The only way muscles are built is by doing something that breaks them down. Then they repair themselves to answer a test, and you repeat the process over and over. Bottom line, your body gives you what you ask of it. My regimen includes running Mount Pisgah, a local hill that offers me 1,100 feet of gain in 1.5 miles. I can do this multiple times per run and end up getting in great leg and cardio training. I also lift weights and spend time daily shooting a bow. You need to be disciplined to grow endurance to become stronger. Roy was pushed by something else. He once shared where his strength came from in a book he inscribed years ago to me. "Cam, seasons come and go. This is the one consistent thing in my life." He wrote this in a Bible he gave me. Over the decades I knew him, his faith never changed. While I had been all over the place, he always remained rock steady. He had one girlfriend, Jill, whom he loved and married. I followed a different path before settling down. He never said one cuss word his entire life. I said them too often. He never drank alcohol. While earlier in my life, I drank enough for both of us. Despite being polar opposites on many things, our friendship never wavered, not even slightly. We were bound together by our love for bow hunting and by the strength we carried into the wilderness. I was thankful not only that Roy was a great bow hunting buddy, but even more so that he was always a man I could lean on in a time of need. Someone I could tell anything to and never be judged. Even though he had always been a faithful Christian and I hadn't, he never preached to me. He modeled pure living, which I wanted to emulate, and always answered my questions on his beliefs. Roy not only loved bow hunting, but he loved knowing that through hunting, he was able to impact people whom otherwise he never would have met. "I believe the hunting world is my missions field," Roy once said. "I mean, you just can't come up to a lot of people and start saying, 'Hey, you know, this is what I believe. This is how I think maybe you should believe.' They have no respect for you. You've got to gain respect for people to listen to you, for you to have an impact on them. And the hunting world is a hard world that way. So if you can gain their respect through your hunting accomplishments, I believe that's why God gives you those talents." A week later, now weeks after our moose hunt, I was in Colorado bow hunting with Kip Folks and Mark Womack. As the sun set on the eastern plains, I spotted and stalked a big Colorado whitetail. He was in pre-rut and had just been watching another 10-point, so he was a little wound up. Mark and I were pinned down while Kip was hunting somewhere else. "I'm just going to go for it. Try to cut the distance down to about 100 yards. I whispered to Mark, who was filming me. I hustled toward the buck as quietly as possible. He saw something a few times, but I was staying pretty low, crawling mostly. We figured he thought I was that other buck, so while I closed in on him, he started coming my way. He came pretty fast, licking his lips and even stopped to make a scrape in the sagebrush. At 60 yards, he started to skirt me a bit, so I figured it was time. The shot felt good, but it was a touch low and he's quartering to a tiny bit. I felt it was good enough to kill him, so Mark and I backed out, planning to come back at first light to recover him. That night before bed, we reviewed the footage and concluded, dead buck. Looked like liver, but you never know. I climbed into my bed that night with excitement and belief that we would find the buck in the morning. Sleep wouldn't come, however. At 11 p.m., my cell phone rang. It was Trace. "Roy's been in an accident," she told me. She didn't know all the details about what had happened, so I knew I needed to call Jill, Roy's wife. I phoned her and asked what was going on. After a long pause, Jill said, "Cam, Roy's not coming home." Jill's voice sounded soft and tired. I asked, "What do you mean?" She said, "He fell. He passed away." My stomach dropped, and the darkness of the old farmhouse kitchen I stood in, there in the middle of nowhere, Colorado, felt darker and lonely. I couldn't believe her words. Right away, I thought of their children, Taylor and Justin and Alan. Roy had fallen 700 feet from a cliff in the nasty country we hunted sheep in. He was on Pioneer Peak, the exact same mountain where I had killed my ram in 2008 and where Roy had killed rams since. Now in 2015, the mountain had won. He lost his footing doing something we'd done many times over the years and the type of country we loved to hunt. Tough, rugged, unforgiving. A fellow hunter named Colt Foster was with him and witnessed the tragedy. They eventually had to get a helicopter in there to retrieve Roy's body. Jill had lost her husband, their kids had lost their dad, and their business had lost its heart and soul. It was devastating. I sat up all night, heartbroken, mad, and confused, how someone I thought was invincible in the mountains could have a life-ending accident. When the alarms finally went off and the others stirred, I filled them in on the news as we waited for the sun to rise. They sipped coffee. I sat and stared. Tears welling in my bloodshot eyes and rolling slowly down my cheeks. When there was enough light to go look for my buck, we headed out. That morning's search for the buck was painful. I had a handful of good men helping me. After the initial futile effort, instead of hanging around the others, I wandered off by myself, scanning the ground while looking for blood through tears. I crossed paths with the other guys every so often, so I'd try to dry my eyes and we'd say to each other, "Anything?" Meaning any sight of blood. "Nope," was the answer each time. I wanted to find this buck so bad for Roy, it hurt. But hunting can be an exercise in frustration at times. I knew the buck wasn't concerned about Roy and wouldn't be sacrificing himself to give me a sliver of something positive to offset the pain. However, I knew Roy would have loved to see my buck and hear a good hunting story. I had to find the deer for Roy. We all vowed to look until we found him, because Roy and I had always been on the same page when it came to tough blood trails. If the animal died or was going to die, we'd get him, and we always did. However, no blood trail in this country meant it would be tough going. I thought about Roy and how he'd just gotten his outfitter's license. We had big plans. We had spent decades building a brotherhood, chasing Alaska's most epic bow hunting adventures, and things were finally starting to click. Roy's outfitting business was blowing up as everyone wanted to hunt with Big Roy. He was planning to do this great caribou and grizzly combo hunt. Becoming an outfitter was going to give him more opportunities to be exposed to true Alaskan adventure, so both of us were excited about the future. It had just seemed like it was all coming together for Roy. Life is never going to be the same. I thought about how Roy would have acted if he had heard this sort of news about me. I knew he would have remained tough, and conversely, I couldn't have felt weaker. I was mad that we'd never be able to share another hunt together. I hurt because I would never again get to be miserable with him in the mountains, which is one of our favorite pastimes. My heart ached for his family. Eventually, Roy's inspiration, or maybe it was his guidance, led us in the right direction, and the grid search paid off. We found what I've dubbed Roy's buck, dead, after he went about a mile from where I'd hit him the night before. My GPS tracker showed I'd walked 6 miles that morning looking, and the other guys, Mark, Kip, Sean, and Tom, had done at least the same. I owe them all for staying so steadfast in the search for Roy's buck. He was a beautiful animal, and the meat was still good, sweet-smelling as ever. I was thankful for that. The Colorado whitetail I had killed would always be Roy's buck to me. More tears flowed as I called Jill and told her it felt like Roy was there with us and helped me get my buck. We had stayed Roy tough, and it had paid off. Roy's service was beautiful, emotional, and empowering. I think many in attendance encountered God's love in the midst of the pain. Everything Roy loved was there. His family, Palmer High School, where his kids went, and where he helped coach baseball and football. Hundreds of friends and legions of tough Alaskan hunters just like he was. Roy set the standard that many of us strive to match. The respect for Roy in the community was made evident by the large crowd. He had made a difference. He made people want to do more, work harder, be better, and love deeper. I think that what Roy would have loved the most, though, was a strong presence of the Lord. The pain from Roy dying was deep for everyone at his memorial service. What I planned on doing was being strong to help those who were hurting worse than me, like his wife, Jill, their kids, his mom and dad, sisters, and so on. As I stood behind the podium, however, I found that talking about Roy in the past tense was harder than I thought it would be. I didn't have notes, and I hadn't really made a plan for what I wanted to say. I just wanted to speak on what was in my heart. I did that. But there was still no way to truly express everything I felt. How could I adequately sum up the story of how Roy first introduced me to my life's passion and then embarked on many adventures with me? How could anyone know that, as a kid and young man navigating a broken home, poisoned by alcoholism, I had finally found peace in archery and with Roy as my anchor and best friend? How could I begin to explain Roy's unceasing belief in me and my dreams? Not just bow hunting dreams, but writing dreams and business dreams. No challenge was too big in Roy's mind. Nobody could ever understand this the way I did. We thought we could succeed with our bows in any situation, and for almost 30 years, in some of the most rugged, unforgiving, wild country, we did. I felt like I failed while I was on stage speaking at his service. Jill saw me in pain and felt inclined to come up and hug me as I spoke about what Roy meant to me. When I went and sat down after speaking, I was hard on myself. Wow. Way to screw that up. While it would have been nice to be a little more composed, I later felt that maybe I had achieved my goal of conveying the impact Roy had on me after reading a message a gentleman sent me on Facebook. Hi, Cameron. I wanted to tell you how much I valued what you had to say about your friend. Your words about friendship and love and faith and doubt were so raw, so real. I think we are all accustomed to pleasantries and platitudes, where emotion from the heart is watered down into trite phrases, but you offered only honesty. I sure love that man. I think he loved me too. Some days I believe I'm going to see him again, but there are other days when I just don't know. I was crying. I think everyone else was too. What really struck me from the service is how much Roy impacted those around him. I've gotten so used to hearing packaged sermons and haphazard sprinkled Bible verses, but Roy was the gospel for the people in his path. The way he lived his life and chose to love those around him, including you, was an example for everyone who knew him of what a life in communion with God looks like. I'll leave you with one more thought I've been dwelling on. All of your Roy stories I've heard over the years, including your words about your dear friend, tell of a big man who lived a big life. And now, partly because of Roy's impact on your life, you have chosen to share with people a glimpse into your faith. Maybe that means you are the gospel as well. Maybe I can be the gospel too. I couldn't answer that man's question because I didn't know. It was just another chapter in the saga of my meandering path through friendship and love and faith and doubt. Roy Roth was the toughest person I've ever met. I sometimes find myself unfairly comparing others to him, and then I remember, there will never be anyone like Roy. But the second toughest person I've known might be his wife, Jill. She was strong in his service, and she has remained strong. Soon after Roy's passing, Jill set the goal of creating a room for Roy, which would include some of his mounts, mementos, photos, and so on. All things Roy. With the help of friends, family, and Roy and Jill's kids, Roy's room was completed just as she envisioned, 2 years after his death. To celebrate the unveiling, Jill organized a gathering held at their home, and it was amazing. Roy's room was filled with so many good people, which included Roy's mom, dad, sisters, children, grandchildren, hunting buddies, fellow coaches, and friends from church, to name a few. Stories flowed freely. It was just the type of crowd and conversation Roy loved, and it all happened because of Jill and her loyalty to Roy. I'm honored to have known Roy and call him my best friend, and similarly, I'm honored to know, love, and respect Jill. She's not tough in the mountains like Roy was, but she's just as tough in her own way. Her strength and poise in losing Roy has amazed me. Just like Roy, Jill leads by example. I could fill a book with stories to illustrate Roy's toughness and positive attitude, and maybe one day I will. One story I will never forget is our doll sheep hunt in 2008 on the beautiful and rugged Pioneer Peak, Alaska, that was wonderfully captured on film. The words I wrote in my article about the hunt seemed to foreshadow what happened to Roy in that same country on the same type of hunt exactly 7 years later. The climb to sheep country is brutal and one I won't soon forget. I'd been nervous about this hunt from the get-go. I knew full well that this could very well be the only sheep hunt I'd go on in my entire life. Make no mistake, if you got in trouble on the mountain, there's nothing anyone in the valley could do for you. Alaska sheep country is as unforgiving a place as there is, regardless of the view. As many have seen, on that sheep hunt, I had a terrible hit on my ram. My arrow deflected off a rock I was attempting to squeeze a shot by, and it hit him in the ankle. Basically, it cut his wrist. He made it up and over the mountain as we glassed him the entire way. The sheep was bleeding, but that wasn't a shot anyone wanted on an animal. After watching him go over the top, I hiked up to where Roy had watched my stalk and the shot from. He too saw the blood on the ram's ankle as it limped up the mountain. "Nice shot," Roy said sarcastically as I approached him. I looked at the top of the rugged ridge the ram disappeared over. "Yeah, cool, huh? I suck." "We will get him. Might take a week, but we'll get him." "Yep," I said as I nodded. That type of attitude and unwavering confidence was huge. In the end, we did get him, as those who have seen the video know. It was ugly. I had to grab the not-quite-dead-yet ram before he fell off a cliff and hold him there as he died, but we got him. That hunt will always be a reminder that even though Roy was fearless, he always respected the danger of those mountains, the same country that ultimately took his life. I think it's important to share the advice Roy gave me as I headed down to finish off my sheep, because while he had hard-earned confidence, he also wasn't stupid and didn't take crazy risks. My ram was on the edge of a cliff in very steep country covered with ice and snow. Glassing the injured ram from the ridge top, I said, "Well, I have to go get him." Roy studied the cliff. "Cam, where he's at, I'm not sure if you can even get down there, and if you do, you might not be able to get back out." Looking down at the weakened ram, I said, "Maybe so. I guess we're going to find out." And off I went. Fate was on our side that day. I got to the ram, killed him, and we got him off the mountain. In the same situation now, I'd guess the outcome would likely be similar, but the victory wouldn't be as sweet as it was then, because then I shared it with Roy, the only person on this earth who could know what killing that ram meant to me and what it took to get it done. I think he felt similar about me because when he did something next level, I'd be his first call. When he stuck his head in the brown bear den and the 10-foot bear took a swipe at him as it boiled out, he called me minutes afterward from the mountain, excitedly telling me the story. When he killed a big doll or giant grizzly, which is something he had done more than any other bow hunter in the world, I'm pretty sure he'd call and his first words would be something like, "Too hard." This was code for us, so I'd jokingly feed into the game and say, "Well, that's okay. It's good just to get out in nature. You don't have to kill to have a good time, Roy." We'd laugh, and I'd usually follow this up with something like, "So now we got the jokes out of the way. You get it done?" He invariably answered, "Cam, that's why I went." Yep, Roy always got it done. When the chips are down, what gives you strength to keep pushing? I once asked Roy this, and the first thing he mentioned was a strong Christian faith. Just like on my doll sheep hunt, he trusted everything would work out according to God's plan, and this gave him great confidence. He always kept a positive attitude and expected to achieve his goal on every single hunt. Roy believed God gave him the strength and the ability to be successful, which in turn would allow him to have a positive influence on others. As for my faith, I still have a hard time. When someone dies, everybody always says, "They're in a better place, we'll see him again." People talk about how glorious heaven is going to be, and all that sounds good. It makes you feel good. But my faith isn't so much that it's unshakable. I do have faith, and some days I feel good, and I feel like I will see Roy again. Then some days, I wonder. We had such great hopes and big plans in 2015. We had two of our best hunts and were excited about Roy getting his outfitter's license. I knew Roy would make the best outfitter ever because of his likable personality, his knowledge of hunting, and his toughness. Things were happening, and then he died. I'll be honest, I'm still mad that it happened. But I'll never forget what Jill told me about the night Roy died. It gives me comfort the same way I'm sure it gives her comfort. The night Jill learned Roy had fallen to his death, she understandably couldn't sleep after receiving the phone call. She was up at 1 a.m. looking out the window. From their house, you could see Pioneer Peak, so Jill stared up at the mountain Roy had died on when all of a sudden a glow came over the mountain, a bright light as Jill remembers it. Jill told me it was like the Lord saying, "Don't you worry about Roy, boy. I'm watching over him tonight." She knew she wasn't sleeping and dreaming it. Jill told me that at this moment, she knew things were going to be okay, that she felt a peace come over her. Hearing that made me feel good. Sometimes I wish I could have seen that myself. I still don't feel a peace inside whenever I think about Roy. That's not what's inside my heart. The rescue team couldn't get Roy off the mountain until the next morning after he fell because of weather, and then they only had a little window of time before another storm came in. Joe got the call from them saying that Roy's body was coming in on a helicopter. She and the kids went to the Palmer Airport and waited for him to get there. Then for Roy's family, the tragedy became real. Whenever I have a good hunt or I've had a good year, I tell Roy. That's what we always talked about, our successes. My success was his success, and his success was my success. Roy cared about me, and he loved what I loved, bow hunting, challenges, doing things no one else would do, and living on the edge. I always admired Big Roy's unwavering faith, and I longed for the same peace he always had regarding eternal life and death. He was irreplaceable as a presence in my life, but I'll endure and keep hammering and do my very best to always honor the legend of Roy Roth. When the chips are down, what gives you strength to keep pushing? I once asked Roy this, and now I'm asking you this. When you experience loss or unexpected failure, how do you keep going? Who and what makes you continue to persevere? How will you endure? Love one another. Take time to think about what you're grateful for. I love doing this while on my runs. Pray for people going through hard times, not just family and friends, but also people you work with and encounter. Be grateful to know the stories and the suffering others have to go through. Think about those you've lost and honor their memory. Make sure the people you love know that you love them. If you love someone, tell them. If you value someone's friendship, tell them. If someone inspires you, tell them. If you've hurt someone, tell them you're sorry. Life is too short to be bitter, prideful, or vengeful. Tell them how you feel sooner rather than later, as tomorrow isn't guaranteed. And listen, I'm not perfect, and I let people and myself down all the time. So this is a sobering reminder to me as well as any of you. Love one another. Chapter 16, The Invincible Imposter. Train hard, hunt easy. This means to train so hard that even the most grueling hunts are easy in comparison. That's what I do, and it allows me to be at my very best during the course of even long mountain hunts. I'm invincible. My alarm is set for 4:55 a.m. because getting up in the fours sounds better in my head than getting up in the fives. More committed. But I never make it to the alarm. I turn it off before it goes off. I don't dread getting up. I love it. It's another chance to hammer. I've convinced myself that every day is a gift, and I get to jump out of bed and go run. I'm usually out of the door before 5 a.m., in the fours, to start my fasted cardio run. As I run down the empty streets and see the houses, knowing everyone is asleep inside, in my head, I kind of like it. I don't envy them, because I feel like each morning is another chance to sacrifice a little more. I turn it into a positive and just think how I'm out there working already. That makes me feel good. The saying goes, the greater the sacrifice, the greater the reward. Always has been true, always will be true. You can second guess, take shortcuts, and dismiss, but you'll never change the game. When you change the positive effort you put in, the odds tilt in your favor. That's a fact. There is never a question in my mind asking if I'm going to run today. I'm going to run no matter what. If I'm sick, I still run. If I'm hurt, I'll go slower. I'll limp. Nothing will change. A lot of people look for ways or reasons not to run or exercise. Those things don't even come to my mind anymore. If I think I'm tired, I remember the moments when I'm running hundreds of miles on an ultramarathon and I'm getting an hour of sleep or less. That's when I should be tired. The other times means I'm just being weak. Even though I've killed a number of bulls, upward of 60 now, over the 30 plus years of bow hunting them, and I've had more than my fair share of success, all of that means absolutely nothing this coming elk season. That's what keeps me grinding day after day. I think about that a lot when spending time around others who are amazing in their field, who succeed because they too work their asses off. But on top of it, they have much more God-given talent than I do to focus on their craft. They have Olympic-level ability, tunnel vision focus topped off by sacrifice, or an inhuman level of toughness and mental strength. They will succeed because their ability and their work ethic are both extreme, which is what makes them living legends performing at a level many have never seen. I succeed only because I work more, because I'm up at this hour, every day, grinding it out. This type of effort and training has given me supreme confidence in the mountains. The more I sacrifice and hurt but keep pushing toward my goal in training, the more deadly I feel with my bow. Is it overkill? Not for me. I found that one can never really prepare too much. You learn something every year, every hunt, every day, but you have to sacrifice to keep the education going. So do you want a bow hunt? You want to run ultra marathons? That shit doesn't happen overnight. You have to keep at it every day. You have to keep sacrificing, sacrificing, sacrificing. There'll be a payoff, but it's going to take a while. Tomorrow's never guaranteed. I could have big goals and dreams down the road, but I could be dead tomorrow. So I pretty much take one day at a time. I give the best I can every day. I'm an imposter. Sometimes I look at my life and wonder what the hell happened and how did I get here? I remember where I came from and I see what I've achieved and I see so many things I don't deserve. I think about the hunts I get to do and the people I encounter and the lives I get to impact. And I sometimes feel like somebody's going to come in my house and wake me up back to reality. What the fuck is going on here, Cam? What are you doing? What do you think this is? Get back to your shitty little town and the shitty life that you deserve. There are times when I feel like that is going to happen. I've mentioned that to Joe Rogan before, and he says even he feels like that at times because of where he came from. Here's this regular guy who signed a massive $200 million podcast deal, and he feels what experts call the imposter syndrome, feeling like a pretender in your life. I get that. Even at work, I'm the superintendent, but I don't feel like I deserve to be there. The guys respect me, and I'm good at managing them, but I don't know if I deserve to be superintendent. I don't have a degree. I never asked to be superintendent. I was the buyer, and I was good at that. My buddy got promoted to director, and I knew he needed help with the field guys, so I said I'd do it. It's not like I ever dreamt of being a superintendent, especially with all this other stuff going on. So I didn't know then, and I still don't know. Sure, I know I sacrifice a lot, but I know other people sacrifice a lot and don't get the rewards I do. When people leave comments saying how I changed their lives, I'm humbled. I don't feel like I deserve that type of influence. I'm humbled that I have it. To me, I feel unworthy as I think about all the people over the years I've let down, disappointed, and not shown compassion for when I should have, or the times I've been selfish when I should have given. It haunts me. One day I was listening to this podcast when I was running, and people were saying, Cam gets to go on some pretty sweet hunts, and I can't afford a $70,000 elk hunt like he can. I'm thinking to myself, what are you talking about? I can't afford it either, just like you can't. I'm lumped in with the rich guys, but in my mind, I'm still thinking I'm just this warehouse worker because somebody's going to figure this charade out, and that's where I'm going to be back. I'll be back working in the warehouse and be like, hey, can I get some overtime? Because at overtime, I'd actually be making a decent amount of money. Because if you're making $10, well, now at time and a half, you're making $15. That adds up. That means something. That's still my mentality. I understand people who put me in some elevated category or preconceived box, but that's neither who I am nor how I feel. Maybe that's one reason I never feel like I've done enough. Why I feel like I have to sacrifice more than anyone. Maybe it shows that, okay, this is why I have all this. This is why I'm blessed. It's because I'm giving more. I think I'll die before I will ever feel like I've made it, like I've arrived, and I can take a break now. The downside, if there is one, is honestly, I think what I do isn't a recipe for a long life. I'm obsessed. Be obsessed or be average, I say. Sometimes it takes obsession to succeed at difficult tasks. When I first started bow hunting, I was so obsessed with tagging a bull with my bow that I didn't go to any college classes, missing the first 2 full weeks of school, until I arrowed that bull toward the middle of September. If I hadn't gotten him, I would have missed an entire month with no regret. It meant that much and still does. I get obsessed with things, but as I always say, if you're not obsessed, you're going to be mediocre. I don't care what it is. If you have a healthy, balanced relationship with whatever dream you have, then nobody will ever know your name. That's the cold, hard truth. Sure, there are those born with the physical capabilities to play in the NBA, but I'm sure LeBron James would say he's been obsessed with basketball his whole life. The great Wayne Gretzky once said that parents always come up to him and ask if he could tell their sons how many hours a day he used to practice playing hockey. I say, I didn't, Gretzky said. It was a passion. I'd be out there all day long because I loved it. If you want to excel, you've got to think about it, obsess about it, and sacrifice, or it's never going to happen. That's all there is to it. I became obsessed with bow hunting. End of story. Actually, it's not the end of the story. The story continues each and every day through hard work, through obsession. San Francisco 49er Jerry Rice, one of the greatest players to ever compete in the NFL, used to run a hill. In fact, it's nicknamed the hill. The steep incline was 2.5 miles up, and Rice ran it every day when the season was over. It taught me endurance, Rice said, being able to function when you're really tired. When there's nothing else, somehow you find a way to dig a little deeper. So that last 800 meters, it made a lot of guys cry. It made a lot of guys throw up. That was part of my regimen during off-season. Jerry ran the hill to achieve dreams and get his Super Bowl rings. Some players probably told him that running hills had nothing to do with football, that it didn't help a man become better at catching footballs. They said this mostly because they didn't want to run hills, as it's hard. So by discounting Jerry's approach, they created a way out for themselves. Jerry believed otherwise, so he did it religiously. He outworked the competition, and by running hills, he earned 3 Super Bowl rings. Did running hills help him? Sure seemed to. He's the GOAT of NFL receivers. His former teammates would vouch for this obsession when talking about Jerry Rice. I don't think I've come across anyone in life who has a greater obsession with being perfect than Jerry. Former 49ers tight end Brett Jones recalled, he wanted to be perfect in every single aspect of the game. It really drove him. That's the mindset I carry into the wilderness. I obsess about the thought of not being successful on a hunt. That's the reason I run my own hill. I run because I feel like it's helped me achieve my dreams. And like Jerry's naysayers, plenty of people have taken shots at me for 30 years now and discount my training. They say that running to prepare for bow season is a waste of time, yet I find success every year. For some weak souls who don't have what it takes to work and sacrifice, or those who don't prioritize hunting the way I do, it very well might be a waste of time. You have to work hard and sacrifice. You have to stand out to succeed. You have to pick and choose what you're going to be and what you're going to excel at. You can't excel at 100 different things because you have to be obsessive to excel. So, if you're obsessive about business, you're probably not going to have time to be obsessive about archery, because that's what it takes. Obsession to be the best at one thing. I'm an example. As parents, we have high hopes and expectations for our kids. The biggest thing for me is that I've always wanted to be a good example to my kids and show them what hard work can mean. I've told them repeatedly that I'm nothing, that I'm not special. I've told Tanner and Truett that they're more athletic than me. I've told Taryn she's way smarter than I was. They are all way better people than I was at their age. So if I've achieved what I have achieved, I said to them, you can achieve more. I want to show my kids what giving your best can equate to. Going back to the subject of obsession, if you're going to be great at one thing, you're probably not going to be great at other things. The way I've looked at it, I know I've definitely been short in some areas because I've been obsessive about other things. I know I probably wasn't the best dad, the best husband, the best whatever, because I've been obsessed about bow hunting. For example, spending $3,000 to go on an out-of-state hunt, we don't have the money, and a newborn baby at home? Yeah, that's probably not a good decision. That's not being the best provider you can be, because I put my dream ahead of being a provider for my family, for the people who rely on me. If you're being honest with yourself, and I have been honest with myself, I know I've fallen short. That's not justifying it at all, that's just being real. Oftentimes, what we expect of our kids isn't necessarily in line with what we expect of ourselves. We push them and say things like, you don't have to be the best, just give your best. While many of us are simply going through the motions at work and life. But I've always committed to giving more and working harder than others, and I've tried to explain that mindset to my kids. Listen, you guys aren't special, I always told them. If you give what everybody else gives, you're not going to stand out. You're going to have to give more if you want to achieve anything. You have to give more than everybody else. That's always been my mindset, but as a parent, sometimes I've second-guessed this. When my boys were young, they would go and spend the night with their friends, and they came home telling stories about the other dads. I would say, well, he's teaching his son to be a pussy, basically. I wanted my kids to be prepared for the shit we go through in life, because life is a competition. If you want to excel, you're going to have to sacrifice. So maybe I didn't teach them certain things, but I taught them how to be tough. I was always hard on them, especially the boys. I loved them, and they knew I loved them, but I would never cut them slack. As I've become older, I've second-guessed how I raised them and the things I said. Did I screw up these kids? I remember when Tanner came and told us he was going to go to Army basic training because he wanted to be an Army Ranger. I had a terrible thought. Did I mess this kid up by my weird excessive approach to life? Tanner was at the time a sheriff's deputy in our town, which is a good job. He was making $70,000 a year, and more than that, it's a respectful, important field and could be a rewarding career. I was fine with his job as a deputy and very proud of him. But I had also told them growing up, if you're average, then you're a failure. I had come clean and told them that I never should have said that, that having an ordinary job and an ordinary life meant you were a failure. I was wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. We need people to count on for jobs like that. Deep down, regret whispered in my ear. Did I fuck up my boys? Tanner gave me some reassurance when I spoke to him before he left for basic training. No, Dad, I just feel like I have more to offer this world than working at the jail for the next 25 years. He's right. Being a ranger is tough. Rangers are elite soldiers, but he's great at it, and he's a freaking beast. Sometimes the biggest thing in parenting my kids was trying to give life to this mindset of mine. I've spoken to myself, God, life is hard. Why does it feel unfair and defeating? I've learned firsthand the hard way that if you're weak of body and spirit, life is going to be that much harder. Knowing this meant I had to show them tough love. Recently, when Tanner was home on leave, he was watching some of the videos from when he played basketball in high school. Dad, you were right. I was so lazy. No shit, I told him. I never played defense. No kidding. He's 27 and can see that now, but back then, we used to have the biggest arguments about effort. I was always like, you get on that ball, be ready. But he didn't want to do it. On offense, he was great. One time, he scored 32 points and a half and earned All-State as a senior. So in my mind, I wondered what he could have done if he'd worked harder. Yet even so, I would sometimes second-guess myself. Am I a psycho? Or is he actually trying his best? I live every day feeling like if you're not giving all you got, then you're not really honoring the gift of life. I don't want to just get by, but at the same time, I don't want to discount those out there who give their all in different ways. Like moms who are giving it all they got, and being the best to them means being the most nurturing and loving mom for their kids. With the boys, I was focused more on giving all you got from a physical standpoint. But now with Taryn, I've had to adjust. For her, it means striving to achieve greatness from an educational and intellectual standpoint, since that's where she excels. She's brilliant, actually. So to stay true to my recalibrated expectations, I'm trying to get her to apply to Oxford University or another renowned institution of higher learning. She's got the ability. Recently, Truett finished his first 100-mile endurance foot race. Last year, he exceeded David Goggins' 24-hour pull-up record of 4,030 by doing 4,100. Accomplishments like this cause me to reflect on how being a dad to my three amazing kids has so enriched my life. I've failed as a parent many times and maybe been too hard on my kids, thinking I'm preparing them for the challenges life is sure to throw their way. These misgivings have been mitigated for a couple of reasons that have little to do with me. One, Tracy has offered unwavering motherly love and support when I've been too hard or demanding. And two, our kids, not really kids anymore, men and a perfect young lady, are tough, smart, and much more capable than most. It is because of these reasons my errors as a dad aren't as noticeable to others. To me, they're glaring. All that said, what I've always tried to do in regard to expectations is, while yes, I expect a lot of them, it's not more than I expect of myself. No excuses. Give your all. Show up when you're supposed to. Speak your mind. Own your mistakes. Think with perspective. And live a life worth remembering. When I wrote those last few sentences, something occurred to me. My kids might reflect these attributes better than I do. Maybe the teacher has become the student. I endure. Everyone has strengths. My strength is the ability to endure in the mountains, to endure the pain, the pace, the frustration, all of it. If I keep pushing, eventually I will outlast whatever roadblock is stopping me from reaching my goal. That makes me feel invincible. That lessens my feeling like an imposter. This explains why I'm obsessed. Maybe this shows why I'm an example to others. Many years ago, I decided I was going to work hard every day on being the very best bow hunter I could be. Along with taking care of my family, that's my purpose in life. Everything I do is prioritized around this drive and this dream. I start at 5 a.m., I finish at 8 p.m. every day. I give it my best. I have gratitude for the gifts and opportunities I'm given. I enjoy the journey. Steve Prefontaine was right. To give anything less than your best is to sacrifice the gift. That's exactly how I look at it. Bow hunting can be a struggle. It's hard and very competitive. It can be very cutthroat, but so can life. Our passions and hopes and dreams in life can resemble that doll sheep I arrowed in Alaska with Roy. Sometimes those dreams lie bleeding at the edge of a cliff, clinging to life. Life can be tough and beat us down. We can experience loss, a loved one or family member, a job or a dream. We battle our own demons and dependencies. We all take hits and get beaten down. That's when we have choices to make. Only you can choose not to hesitate. Only you can keep moving. Only you can climb over snow and ice and tough footing and steep, rugged country. You're the only one ultimately able to grab onto those horns and see if there's any life left. You're going to fight for it. You're going to get kicked. Clasping onto hope can be hard. It's easy just to give up. Will your dream get pulled over the cliff? Are you going to be able to survive? Can you find the strength to endure? When I grabbed onto the horns of that doll sheep, time stood still for a moment. My life flashed before me. I thought of all those who were important to me. Is this it? There I was, holding on to a 250-pound wild animal that with one false move could pull me over that cliff. Ultimately, I dragged him up onto that small ledge, tied him off, and held him there. I breathed in and stared down the mountain. I survived. I'm going to make a home from this. I thanked God for one more day to see those whom I love. I made it off that mountain with a trophy on my back. Looking back, it was no doubt a highly questionable decision to try to hold him inches, so close to certain death, but this was my sheep. I'd waited a lifetime for that moment. I held a dream in my hands and I wasn't going to let it go for anything. What cliff are you standing next to? And what will prevent you from falling down it? What dream do you hold that you're not going to let go of? My achievement on Pioneer Peak was one I never, ever thought I'd realize. It's also a reminder of what I repeatedly say. If I can do it, anyone can. But you will have to earn it. You will have to endure. The steeper, more rugged it gets, the more the climb asks of my legs, the harder my heart and lungs work, moving blood and oxygen to fuel my quick and aggressive ascent to the summit, the happier I am. Start early, train more, work hard, excel, and over time, you'll create separation. What are we doing? I often ponder what it is we are doing on this journey we call life. It can end in a blink of an eye, and whether I'm here or gone, other than my immediate family, not much would change. Thinking about what's important and what's not while balancing time and prioritizing obligations, sometimes I wonder, can I do everything I need to do to the level I want to do it, or is it too much of a burden that might not really matter in the grand scheme of things anyway? What keeps me on track with all this and drives home the answer to this question is you. Every person who has read one of my posts and who is listening to this now. Because you care, I care. I talk to you and listen because my life's focus is not on the haters of the hunting industry or my regular work, the naysayers or the trolls, but instead on the people who live with passion and love life. I look you in the eye with respect and connection because our journey is a shared one. And for whatever reason, your life has given my life a sense of purpose. That said, I hope you find your passion, your true passion in life. Some people never do, and they die without ever really knowing what lay dormant inside of their soul. That's where I feel lucky. I found something that motivates me. Epilogue. Relentless. Every epic adventure concludes with a return home. Rocky lasts in the ring with Apollo Creed, and while he doesn't win the fight, he wins back his confidence and Adrian's love. Luke Skywalker and Han Solo receive medals for helping the rebellion blow up the Death Star in Star Wars. Maximus defeats Commodus and Gladiator, but dies in the process, being reunited with his family in the afterlife. The hero always comes home, but he's a different person from when he first left. The journey has changed him. He is wiser and tougher, and he carries a few more scars. We all love stories, dramatic and epic tales of heroes and their journeys, especially when they're about real people. But I like what Joe Rogan said best. I love a success story, but even more than that, I like a dude who fucks his life up and gets his life together again story. Joe's quote hits home. I've earned some success, but not after many F-ups. That's probably the story of most people. People love hearing about the success and the rewards, but they often ignore the decades of work and dismiss the grind. That's one reason I created an instant bond with David Goggins. He too overcame hellish odds, much greater than mine, to get to the mountaintop. We still love the grind as much as ever. There's a great line Goggins shares about both our journeys. It's about what we do with opportunities revoked or presented to us that determines how a story ends. Our lives can be similar to a bow hunt. Sometimes on a hard hunt, it might all come down to one opportunity that I must take advantage of. When will your opportunity come? What will it look like? Hard to say. All you can do is be ready for it. In some ways, I've come back home. Well, to a home of sorts. It's May 2021, and I'm back in Alaska. It's the first time I've returned to hunt Alaska since the moose hunt with Roy in 2015, shortly before his death. I don't think about tomorrow, and I usually don't think about yesterday, but today, I'm looking back, thinking about Roy. Memories flood me. I think back on our first out-of-state bow hunt back in 1990. Roy and I drove from our hometown of Marcola to Northern California to arrow wild boars and bring bacon back home. Packing those pigs out of steep canyons by slinging them over our shoulders made us a bloody mess. Picture two young men, just kids, loving life and beginning to live out their dreams. God only knew what adventures and journeys they were about to take. We shared over 30 hunts in Alaska, from Kodiak Island to Prince of Wales to as far north as you can go after moose, caribou, sheep, deer, black bear, grizzly. We lived for the biggest, most epic experiences. We lived for the journey, not just the reward. Roy and I didn't go to the movies, bowling, shopping mall, or tavern together like some guys do with their friends. Ours was a friendship forged exclusively during years of hard, remote, challenging bow hunting endeavors. Tests that had us beat down, weakened, questioning our toughness, spirit, and manhood, only for us to rise up, endure, and overcome it all many times on the way to against all odds success. People who have shared intense, difficult experiences with others know how fast a bond can form. I've seen one tough mountain hunt turn a regular friendship into a brotherhood. Well, Roy and I experienced hard, challenging hunts together probably 100 times over for almost 3 decades. The bond we had was powerful. It hurts the same every time I think about Roy, and I don't know if that's ever going to really change. I miss the hunts, the talks, the gas station junk food on the way to bow hunting in the mountains, and carrying the last load out after all the meat has been hauled off the mountain. I miss him badly as my irreplaceable hunting partner, but as a friend, I'm afraid there's a hole that will never be filled. I miss you, Big Roy, but I understand your work here was done. Our greatest successes are the most meaningful because of who we share them with. If someone is important to you and has helped you out along the way, tell them you appreciate them. That's a good segue into my saying thanks to you. So many people have shared their passions and their pursuits with me, and I've been inspired to hear the stories of victory and failure and personal growth and overcoming. I'm driven by the comments from those who have been motivated by something I've said or done. I will say it again. With hard work, you can do incredible and amazing things. I'm here because of my consistent work, not my incredible talent. You can achieve greatness. I'm here standing on the sidelines believing in you. What's cool is you don't need anyone to believe in you, not even Cam Haynes. You just need to believe in yourself. A famous bow hunter named Bobby Fromm helped me come up with the phrase, keep hammering. He's a stud. He owns a pro shop in San Diego called Performance Archers and has killed all 29 big game animals in North America. He used to call me Cam the Hammer. Inspired by that, a gym I trained at in Eugene called Forever Strong put Keep Hammering on a t-shirt with my name on it for me. I decided I liked it. As Joe Rogan joked in an impromptu skit we did while on a Utah elk hunt, it's catchy. I feel like you should make shirts or something. With Keep Hammering? Yeah. So I guess I'll just go ahead and give Joe all the credit. There's an incredible quote that inspires the San Antonio Spurs that is a beautiful summary of the Keep Hammering mindset. I love the Spurs and their approach to professional basketball. They are always focused on how they do things, not the reward for what they do. They care about the process, not the result. In 2018, NBA star and former Spur George Hill told me about the words of 20th century poet Jacob A. Riis that hangs in the Spurs locker room. When nothing seems to help, I go and look at a stonecutter hammering away at his rock, perhaps 100 times without so much as a crack showing in it. Yet at the 101st blow, it'll split in two. And I know it was not that blow that did it, but all that had gone before. George said that keep hammering reminded him of what the Spurs coach Greg Popovich always preached. Work hard, do it right, and you'll earn those just rewards. I couldn't say it any better, George. Thanks for sharing this quote with me, and now with the rest of the world. The journey is everything. And as I said at the start of this book, all I'm asking is that you get up and go. Begin a journey. Take that first step. I've shared some of these steps with you. I look back and clearly remember my first buck, bull, mule deer with a bow, water buffalo, big bear, Cape buffalo, 100-mile run, 200-mile run. There is even my first hunt without Roy, the day after he fell. Without firsts, there is no progression. As painful as it is sometimes, live, learn, and enjoy the journey. You never know when it's going to end. That's why you have to start. This journey as a hunter, you can't shortcut it. You have to learn those tough lessons. You have to know what success is, and you have to fail. And I think a lot of people, they want a shortcut. They want to get to the top of the mountain without ever being at the bottom. That slow journey up is what makes it special. It's the reason why I am who I am today. Do you have a passion? Have you found your tunnel vision-driven purpose? If not, then go look for it. And if you have found it, then cling to it. Inspiration is a beautiful and powerful thing to discover. When you find something that lights you up, hold on to it. You might just need it when the dark days of life come rolling in. And they will. Life has a way of squelching dreams. Anyone else in love with hard work, the struggle, chasing unrealistic dreams like I'm guilty of? I'm here for you. We can be dream-chasing buddies. My mindset doesn't cost you anything. You don't need a break to get it. It's not about who you know or how rich you are. Over the years, I've seen plenty of people who are jealous when others are successful. They make excuses as to why they themselves haven't experienced similar success. Truth is, each one of us can attain even the loftiest of goals by simply being relentless, every second, every minute, every day. Keep grinding, working, get knocked down, then get back up. Let people talk shit and smile, because if you're focused and driven, no one has the power to stop you. Down the road, they will still be talking shit, and you'll be reaping the rewards of all your tenacity. The journey is the reward. The Greek philosopher Heraclitus said, "No man ever steps in the same river twice, for it's not the same river, and he's not the same man." A river never stops moving. It's always flowing, always changing, just like we are. I spent 53 years moving and flowing and changing. Whatever path you choose, own it. Be the best you can be, and don't apologize. Just keep hammering.
Afterward. My entire life, I was obsessed with finding the hardest men that walked this planet Earth. I sought them in the most difficult jobs in the military and the endurance events in which I participated. I had no idea I would come across such a savage due to a chance encounter. I have trained with many of the toughest and hardest men on the planet, and only one stands out. That one is Cameron Haynes. Now, if any of you know who I am, I'm not saying this for a passage in his book. I'm saying it because it's the truth. He embodies what it means to push beyond human capabilities on a daily basis. That is what separates him. On a day-in and day-out basis, he tests and pushes his limits. In doing so, he has inspired millions and continues to do so. As we are pushing six-minute miles on a 20-mile training run, he's encouraging every runner and cyclist who crosses our path with his famous tagline, "Keep hammering." His mindset is one where he doesn't just want to be a hunter. He doesn't just want to be a runner. He doesn't just want to lift weights. He wants to do it all at the highest level possible and continuously seeks out the best so that he can be better himself. It's very easy to misunderstand this guy. When someone is so driven to be the very best, they can often be misunderstood because he makes you look at yourself. Because of how hard he works, he forces you to look at yourself to see what you could be doing. He exhausts himself on a daily basis to show others what is possible. Cameron's an old school leader. He doesn't just lead by running his mouth. He leads by example. That is very obvious by how amazing his family is. His children exemplify work ethic and discipline that is rare these days, all of which was learned by watching their father extract every last bit of his soul to be his very best. I used to think I was out here alone, never thinking someone was out here working as hard as I was. I now know there's another. When I get with Cameron Haynes, we don't talk about it, but I know that we are both trying to break the other one. In January 2021, Cameron spot checked me. If you don't know what a spot check is, a spot check is basically when a buddy of yours calls you out of nowhere, tells you he or she is coming into town. The idea is to catch you slipping. Being that I know that there's a Cameron Haynes out there that exists and has my number, I can't ever slip. So when Cameron called me and said he was coming into town and wanted to know if I wanted to go for an easy light run and lift some weights, I knew exactly what that meant. It meant a long, hard run and a brutal ass workout. Me knowing that, it was my time to break Cam, so I thought. See, he was coming on my home turf. I knew the course. I knew the distance. All the variables as well as the pace. So we met up at the M Hotel in Las Vegas, and I took him on one of my standard runs. My girl was with me, so I think he thought that we were just going to go out for an easy one. Little did he know, my girl can also throw down. We get about 7 miles into the run, and my girl was only going to do about 14, so she turned around, and we continued on. This is where my plan was going to come into effect. The idea was to take Cameron out for 3 more miles to give us 10 miles before turning around. You can't feel a downhill as you head out, which I know, but Cam doesn't. My idea was to try to break him going back to 10 miles going uphill. At the turnaround, I started at a 6:30 pace. I could tell the uphill was hurting him as he started to fade ever so slightly off my left shoulder and he stopped talking. We had 9 miles to go, all of which was uphill. As we got to mile 15, I could tell he was extremely tired and so was I. My plan of trying to break Cameron Haynes was starting to fall apart. The more I tried to break him, the better he started to run. Before I knew it, Cam was no longer a step behind. He was now a step in front. I was now being paced by Cameron. The tables had turned. David Goggins.
I'm an example of how your passion can change your life, even if that passion is something as obscure as bow hunting. I went from an insecure 15-year-old standing by the meat pullet hunting camp after killing my first deer to speaking to huge groups of people and impacting many daily. I went from driving a wrecked Toyota two-wheel drive pickup to go hunting to flying private to out-of-state hunts. My life has changed not because I'm special, but because I chased my passion and wouldn't accept defeat. I became obsessed and realized that if not obsessed, I'd be average. Bow hunting changed my life. Your passion, whatever that may be, can change yours. You don't need anyone's permission to chase your dreams. This is Cameron Haynes. I hope you've enjoyed this production of Endure, a Macmillan audio production for St. Martin's Press. This title was produced by Guy Oldfield. Direction and post-production by Jeremy Wesley and Wesley Media. Recorded and engineered at Tracktown Records, Oregon. Text copyright 2022 by Cameron Haynes. Production copyright 2022 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.